This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. 877-217-5757 is your number, and our email, talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with a fascinating gentleman, Terry Jastrow. He received his bachelor's degree in communication from the University of Houston, and upon graduation, he went to the big city, worked for ABC Sports, where he became the youngest network producer and director in history. His credits include Super Bowl, 62 major golf championships, and 6 Olympic Games, including the celebrated 1984 Olympics. He lives in Los Angeles. That's where he's joining us. He's a man of many talents. He's been involved in feature films and as a stage actor, and his wife is the fabulous Ann Archer. And good morning to you, Terry Jastrow.
Hello there. Good morning to you.
Good to talk with you, Terry. Now, the book is The Trial of George W. Bush, and some would say that's old news, and in fact, in today's world, he's coming across in some circles as a statesman of sorts, but number 43 was a man of controversy, as we remember, in 2003, when the United States was led into war under false pretenses, and we went to war with Iraq, spent trillions of dollars, lost many lives, and your book is a novel, but it's a novel of historical fiction, I would say.
Yes. Well, it's certainly fiction because it hasn't happened, but in international criminal law, there's no statute of limitations, meaning that a suspected criminal is subject to arrest and trial until the day he dies. And George W. Bush is 75 currently. And so, you know, there's at least, there's plenty of time for someone to bring him to justice for the crimes committed at the Iraq War. I know George W. Bush. We were young guys in Texas together when our fathers were oil men. I played Little League baseball against him. He's a very charming guy. You couldn't get a more personable guy. But he and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and his group waged war following the 9/11 attacks, which we know was 2001, and everybody knew it was Osama bin Laden, and he was held up in Afghanistan at the time. And when Bush was unable to get him after more than a year in 2003, George turned his attention to Saddam Hussein, alleging, by the way, Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks, and George and his people alleged that he had weapons of mass destruction, which proved to be false.
Now, Terry, we're going to try to get you to a better spot. You're coming across a bit faintly, and I want to make sure our listeners hear everything you got to say, because you're saying some pretty powerful things about the former president, George W. Bush. And I said, in the age of Trump, Bush, who was no fan of the 45th American president and his father, they came across as statesmen, even though the Bush family, as you know, the second George W. Bush, he had his hands dirty on the war in Iraq, which was under totally false pretenses, and he even acknowledged, George, from his own words, no weapons of mass destruction. So you have written a book about what a trial would have been like. A listener does note that many years ago we interviewed Vincent Bugliosi, who wrote a book called The Trial of George W. Bush for Murder. It was not a work of fiction, but many people of good faith believe that George W. Bush should have been held accountable for the deaths of American soldiers who went to a war and fought. And as we know, George W. Bush, the second George Bush, found ways not to fight when it was his turn to fight in a war. But this is something that is now 18 years old. What compelled you to write this book?
Well, because I'm a guy. I'm a baby boomer, and in my lifetime, we've lived with two horrible wars, starting with the Vietnam War, which was a terrible war.
that American is dubious why we went over there in the first place and what we accomplished there. And I love people, and so American governments, the military, in the case of the Vietnam War, drafted people and sent them over to the other side of the world to fight a war for dubious reasons. And it has to be asked, what did we accomplish with all the money we spent and all the lives that were lost? What did we accomplish? And here we are years later fighting another war on the other side of the world in Iraq. And the same questions have to be asked. Why did we go in and fight that war at great cost of human life and treasury of our people? But listen, I'm a big advocate for a strong military to protect and defend, but not to attack and conquer. So it's just a question of point of view. And the answer to your question is, if people, peace loving people, don't hold those who fight wars responsible, then more such wars are going to happen in the future, for sure.
And as I stated, George W. Bush himself said, quote, there were no, zero, zilch, no weapons of mass destruction. So give him that. He at least admitted that he was wrong, something that the 45th president never did. Your last chapter starts with a quote from Thomas Jefferson: the care of human life and happiness and not their destruction is the first and only legitimate object of good government. Did George W. Bush miss this objective?
Well, listen, I think it is important to look at a sort of fair and balanced view. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of things that George W. Bush did that were positive for his people and his country. As is the case in most presidents, but I think his legacy, is certainly tarnished because of the Iraq War, which was, 8 years or so, and killed nearly a million people, including Iraqis, and spent between $3 and $6 trillion. A trillion, as you know, has 12 zeros.
A million.
I mean, what? Just think about what we could do with education and climate help and infrastructure and helping the impoverished. There's so many things that require a government to deal with for its society and its people. And the other thing that needs to be said is that when Dwight Eisenhower, his last speech from the White House in 1953, warned of what he called the military-industrial complex, which is that unholy relationship between the military and big business, because they feed each other, and the military creates a concern, maybe danger, maybe fear amongst the people, millions, trillions of dollars are located for military reasons. And the question is, we should be defending ourselves for sure, but do we need to arm our troops and send them to across the world to fight wars that do not need to be fought?
The book from Terry Jastro, producer, director, and author, The Trial of George W. Bush. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. This is basically a United States empire, and we were not supposed to be set up that way. Supposed to be a democracy and peace-loving people, but we have over 800 military bases around the world and three times the military armor of any other nation. We are not. This is not right.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Terry, would you respond, please?
I agree. I agree. We have enough problems of our own. The American government needs to deal more specifically with the American people. That's not to say at all that we ignore our friends and other people around the world. We're citizens of a city, a state, a country, and a world, and we need to pay proportionately attention to those, all of those things.
Terry Jastrow is our guest. Again, your number 877-217-5757. The book is The Trial of George W. Bush, a novel. The trial in the book, as it would, if it were to actually occur, would be in The Hague, most likely, where he would stand trial for war crimes that may or may not have been committed during the Iraqi War. And Terry noted that he first met the 43rd president in the late 1950s. They both lived in Midland, Texas. Their fathers worked in the oil business. And Terry played Little League Baseball against George. He was a catcher for the Cubs. And Terry was a shortstop for the Braves. And Terry says, I won't mention who won, but George's team lost. 877-217-5757. We're back with Terry Jastrow after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. To reach Terry Jastrow, we're with him a bit longer. Winner of 7 Emmy Awards, his book is The Trial of George W. Bush. And a listener notes that not only did the U.S. go to war under false pretenses and cost the country up to $6 trillion in an ill-fated war in Iraq, but also the economy tanked during George Bush's terms in office. In his two terms, the stock market, believe it or not, actually went down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost ground and lost a bit of ground that, of course, was made up and more by President Obama in his two terms. And the listener, Terry, before we go back to the phone line, says that you could make a case that George W. Bush was a far more devastating president than was Donald J. Trump. I don't know if you can make an apt comparison between the two, but Trump did not get us in an ill-fated war, and the stock market, of course, went up during Trump's presidency. Your thoughts?
I actually have no comment about that. I have my own opinions about Donald Trump and his presidency, and I think it's kind of parenthetical to this conversation. I do respect other people's opinion. They're entitled to it for sure, and I'm entitled to mine as well.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Terry Jastrow. Good morning, sir.
Hey, we did not go into Iraq as a conquering force. Went there to provide freedom, Iraqi freedom, and it had nothing to do with 9/11. I don't know why people think it had something to do with 9/11. It had to do with the fact that we had a tyrant who had a history of using weapons of mass destruction on the Kurds.
All right. Well, what about Patrick's statement that this had nothing to do with 9/11? The timing certainly was suspicious, Terry. Your thoughts about the connection to 9/11 and George W. Bush's actions in Iraq in the war against Saddam Hussein. Okay, have we lost Terry? Let's see if we can get him back, Alondra. 877-217-5757 is your number. The book is The Trial of George W. Bush for Murder, Following the Terrorist Attacks in American History. The Worst. September 11, 2001, President Bush pledged to bring those responsible to justice, especially the mastermind, Osama bin Laden. And after failing to capture bin Laden in Afghanistan, Bush shifted his attention in that of the country to Saddam Hussein in Iraq, neither of which had anything to do with 9/11. So was the attack on Iraq and the capture and ultimate assassination or execution of Saddam Hussein, was it a diversion because at that time Osama bin Laden was on the loose? Is that your contention, Terry?
Well, I think after, 9/11 occurred in the year of 2001, and George W. Bush was president of the United States. And after more than a year, I think it was nearly a year and a half, of not being able to bring Osama bin Laden to justice, there was a huge amount of attention on 9/11 for all the obvious reasons. And I mean, you know, Americans want closure of that for sure. And it was just a very, very unfortunate series of events where we were not able to get him and Osama bin Laden and bringing him to justice. And we maybe panicked in some way, I don't know, and turned our attention to Iraq. Saddam Hussein was a terrible guy, but I don't know that it's the United States' job to go out and adjudicate about other leaders. I mean, he was a duly elected president. I understand he became a dictator, but this is the issue of the Iraqi people, not something that the United States should stick its nose in my opinion.
All right. Now, a listener, Tracy at the Capitol, says, what kind of precedent would this set if a U.S. president were brought before an international trial in The Hague? Some would say even if George Bush messed up, he didn't deserve this. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the United Nations was created after World War II, and it's the U.N. that spawned the International Criminal Court. It's under the auspices of the United Nations, and I don't have to tell everybody that it's a hugely important organization that represents the interest of not just the states, but of the world of people. If countries are unable or unwilling to bring suspected criminals to trial, then fortunately we have the International Criminal Court, which stands above all courts in individual countries, as the last bastion of justice. And if someone is determined to have committed crimes under the definition of war crimes and crimes against humanity, there's, you know, three or four different categories. They are subject to arrest and trial at the International Criminal Court, to stand trial in an international court as opposed to a national court.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Terry Jastrow. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to tell Patrick it was Ronald Reagan who licensed a Virginia chemical company to sell chemical weapons that was used to gas the Kurds.
All right. What's your question?
Well, my question was, isn't it a fact that Iraq is closely aligned to Iran, which is becoming a nuclear power that could happen any minute? Certainly that would have never happened under the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. He was an SOB, but he was our SOB. So our security is more in peril because of the invasion of Iraq by that idiot George W. Bush.
All right. It did have a domino effect, no doubt. The world is a different place as a result of our invasion of Iraq. Did the U.S. lose standing in the world because of that, Terry?
Well, it would just be one man's opinion, but I would say yes. I mean, the United States has been a bastion of freedom and democracy, I think it's a tender subject to me. Along my mother's genealogy, I'm a descendant of the second and sixth president of the United States, John and John Quincy Adams, and before that, a family that arrived on the Mayflower in the United States. So I have a huge love and compassion for my country. And I think it stands for such beautiful things. It was a shining example of democracy that sets the example for others to emulate. But we rupture that to some extent when we go fight wars on the other side of the world that we have no business of fighting. So that's about as far as I can go.
All right. A listener asks, since you have this background, a remarkable one, and in television, will this be produced for a television production of some kind?
Well, it certainly would not be a movie because it's way too dense for that. But I've my wife and I watch a lot of those multiple episode television shows. And I think it would be an incredibly interesting and educational and hopefully entertaining show. But I think it could be a multiple episode thing. But the thing about it, you should know, and your audience should know. You know, when you think about a trial, you think about someone being found guilty or innocent. I would just say that neither of those two things happen at the end of this book. Something very interesting happens that doesn't let George W. Bush off the book, off the hook, but something else happens at the end of the story.
And Terry writes very well. As mentioned, his wife is Ann Archer, the amazing actress, a friend of mine, George Kennedy, brother of the U.S. Senator, political consultant. He and I saw Fatal Attraction, and he said, totally unbelievable film, Terry. And I said, why? And he said, who would cheat on Ann Archer?
I agree with your friend.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll spend a few more minutes with Terry Jastrow. Talk at talklouisiana.org. Our email address, the book is The Trial of George W. Bush. We're back after this brief timeout with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing with assistance today from Caroline Menville Alonso. And Terry Jastrow is with us for a few more moments. The book is The Trial of George W. Bush, and this is a man of many talents, award-winning, 7 Emmy Awards at the highest levels when he was working for ABC. And, of course, he's not only a talented TV guy, he's an exceptional writer, and he has dabbled in the film business, and his wife is Ann Archer, the star of Fatal Attraction with Michael Douglas and Glenn Close, one of the great films of all time. Hard to believe it's 35 years since that film was on the big screen, but Terry Jastrow is writing about a guy he knows, George W. Bush. They grew up together in Midland, Texas. Gustavo in Goodwood, I know, has been waiting patiently. Gustavo, we'll get you in before we part with Terry. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning. I agree wholeheartedly in that George W. Bush had no business bringing the United States into a war that we had no chance of winning. I don't know what his purpose was, but it certainly had no connection with 9/11. And if there was an organization that should have dealt with not only Saddam Hussein, but the likes of Omar Gaddafi and all of these guys, Khmer Rouge, et cetera, tyrants, killers, assassins, it should have been the United Nations, which is a useless organism because they don't have any power to impose any kind of sanctions or actually bring people to justice.
Your thoughts, Terry, about Gustavo saying he agrees that the war was ill-fated, but he's not a big fan of the UN either.
Well, it's not the UN specifically who's responsible in this regard. It's the International Criminal Court. And They have had some success in trying and bringing to justice criminals of international crimes. And listen, if you feel you're a citizen of the world, and we all are, this is what exists. So I suggest that everybody support not just their local and national criminal justice system, but also the international criminal system, all the more because we communicate with more and more people around the world very quickly. So it's a very, very critical thing that we all support, I think, international criminal law.
And another listener asked, this is Sherry, about the faith in American government. It was seared during Vietnam, and then I think the Iraqi debacle contributed to it even more. Is that why we're where we are now, with the United States people so reticent about the government and the people who represent us?
Well, I think it's, yes, ultimately it is the people. We, the people, are responsible. And that those of us who are of great hearts and smart and able and love our country and love our states and love our city and fellow Americans, we need to pay a lot of attention to this. I would urge people to read the book and be aware of what can happen. People need to understand that suspected criminals cannot go on about their lives if they've potentially committed crimes. And I would just say for finding the book, The Trial of George W. Bush, the easiest thing to do is just to go to Amazon. Most people, I think, buy it there. It's not that expensive. I think it's, I don't know, 12 or 14 bucks or something. But Amazon, if you're interested, The Trial of George W. Bush, and I would urge you to buy it and get it and decide for yourself what you think about the issue.
All right. Gentleman's been waiting for a little while. We'll slide him in as our final caller for Terry Wilmer in Port Allen. Sir, you're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to know, how did President Bush get Colin Powell go to UN and make that statement about Iraq?
That's a very good question, sir. That is a very good question, because Colin Powell was very ambivalent about the Iraq war. And I do think, you know, George W. Bush was president. Colin Powell was, I don't know, Secretary of State or something. And he did go, and that was a game changer for sure. You put your finger right on it. I don't know whether the United States, the people, would have supported George W. Bush without Colin Powell advocating for the war as well.
And a listener, we'll part on this, since you have this amazing background at ABC, asks, how well did you know Howard Cosell?
Rune Arledge wanted to start a sports magazine show. Television had things like 60 Minutes, was really successful. And he created the Howard Cosell Sports Magazine show somewhere along the line in the mid-70s. And I had the dubious distinction of being assigned to be his producer and director for the Howard Cosell Sports Magazine show. He was an incredible guy, hugely intelligent, very rascible, it's like, you know, he was tremendous to work with, but I wouldn't want to have to spend all my days in his company, because he was a very difficult guy.
I was talking with a gentleman about him the other day, and, you know, he hasn't been replicated. There's nobody like
he's
him.
He's a one-off.
But that show, by the way, which I remember, it was exceptional, as just about anything you have done has been. But, of course, he did not have big success outside of Monday Night Football. And, of course, he was known for the fights he did so well in the Ali era. But what a legacy for broadcasting. And he was great in radio, too. I used to run home, actually bus home, about 15 miles when I was in high school, and make it just in time to hear his commentary, and he would do those commentaries on ABC radio on the fly. He was a brilliant man.
Yes, totally agree. Yeah, I saw him do many of his radio shows, and there was not one word of a script. He would just sit there. He had a stopwatch in his hand, because I think it was 5 minutes long, and he had a commercial around 3 minutes into it. So he had hit his stopwatch and start talking. No notes. He'd lean into the microphone, this is Howard Cosell, and he'd do it, and at 3 minutes he'd hit his stopwatch, and they'd get the commercial in, and he'd look over and wink, like, you know, I'm doing it, all right, and then he would finish the show. He was a genius in that regard. I don't know many people who could have done it.
No, Howard Cosell, speaking of sports, that's how we've closed. Terry, thank you for joining us. Hopefully we'll visit with you again soon. Happy holidays to you and the lovely Ann Archer, and very talented. What a talented family. My goodness.
Yeah, I find it best. I just support her, find out what she wants, and make it happen. That's how we roll. We're 43 years married, so we're doing something right.
In Hollywood, too. So
Yeah, indeed. Listen, I've enjoyed talking. Peace on Earth.
TerryJastrow.com. Thank you, Terry. And we're joined in studio now by another amazing person who's been with us a few times, but it's been a few years, Karen Roy. Her story is well known to some, not well known to others. So before we get to what is happening now, and there is a major development in her life, and she continues to inspire me and others with what she's done over the last 34 years. paralyzed by a bullet outside of Tabby's Blues Bar, September 19th, 1987, after LSU played Rice. And for 34 years, she's been in a wheelchair, but she has lived her life to its fullest, including how many children?
Three.
Three children after being paralyzed from the waist down.
Yes.
And how old are they now?
28, 24, and 21.
So you have had a full life, and I'm sure when this happened, there was grave concern about whether you could have children.
It was my very first question. When the doctor came in and said, you'll never walk again, and I said, can I still have kids? And he said, absolutely. And that was really the motivation probably for everything I did thereafter.
And it has been an inspirational story. And of course, Karen is a person about town. You haven't stayed in your house. I used to see you and Governor Romer at Books a Million on a regular basis.
Yes.
It didn't hamper you from living a full life, did it?
Nope. Because that was the beginning of my college career when it happened, the beginning of my sophomore year. So still had to finish undergrad school and then got a master's degree. And I used to like to study over there with you and Buddy Romer and get out of the house a bit.
And the last time you were on, a listener, as you left, and sometimes I get some of the best questions as people are leaving, asked, how's the process of driving for somebody who's paralyzed like you? You don't have a problem. Like, I know you just came back from Houston. How do you do it?
So any car can be fit with hand controls. So, and they're different, but it's basically the gas and the brake, kind of like a, on a rod, sort of a motorcycle type looking throttle on some of them. You push forward to brake and down for gas. And there are different types. And then, but people even that are quads can drive with adaptations and different type of steering wheels. And it's kind of amazing the technology that exists.
And you, of course, have never shied about going anywhere you wanted to go.
Nope.
At any time, any place, Karen is there. And it all changed on the night of September 19th, 1987, Tabby's Blues Box. For those who haven't heard the story, just one of those wrong place, wrong time things.
Yeah, I'd actually never been there before. My boyfriend at the time was a musician, played guitar. And he went fairly often, along with a lot of other Baton Rouge people, all different races, ages. If you wanted to listen to authentic blues, that's where you went. I didn't want to go that night. I had a bad feeling about it. Not a bad feeling that I was going to get hurt, just sort of a general not wanting to go. But I've said several times that when your hot guitar playing boyfriend wants to go to a bar, you better go with him. So,
and then how did the attack occur?
We were leaving, and my car had been broken into in the parking lot, and I said to him, I told you I didn't want to come here. And then I said, I guess we should call the police. At that moment, someone came up from behind me, unbeknownst to me. Someone came up behind Mike, put a gun to his head. Someone, when they grabbed my shoulders, hit me over the head with the gun, took my purse with my $2 in it, and then shot me point blank in the back, which punctured my lung. I was bleeding profusely, and then caused a T10 complete spinal cord injury.
And we'll hear more. She is a remarkable person and a treasure for Baton Rouge. Karen Roy, your number 877-217-5757, talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're back after this timeout with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal and Caroline Menville Alonso are producing, and Karen Roy is in studio. Tremendous inspiration for all of us. We just heard about her shooting, 19th of September, 1987. So next year will be 35 years, and she has been confined to a wheelchair for that time. But in the last iteration of our visits, you talked about how you're able to get up every now and then. You're able to stand, and that's an amazing thing. And I'm sure it takes a lot of pressure off everything that, of course, is under pressure when you're confined to a wheelchair.
Yeah, I have always been involved with different types of technologies to stay healthy. So I found out about most of those at Mississippi Methodist Rehab in Jackson. So there was standing technology that existed in 1987. And then I also use what's called functional electrical stimulation, FES. It's a bike. And so both standing and using that functional electrical stem, the FES keeps muscle tone on my legs, gives me a cardiovascular workout. The standing prevents bone loss and contractures, and I've never had a wound in 34 years of being paralyzed, which That's is sort amazing. Of unheard of. Yeah.
I remember George Eames, the former head of the NAACP in Baton Rouge. He was paralyzed from the waist down when he was shot as he was walking down a street, shot at Highland and Garfield, 1956. Mm-hmm. Lived until 2012, actually, so 56 years. And he said he didn't get the wounds that you were talking about because he slept on his stomach.
Mm-hmm.
How do you avoid it?
I think it's because I actually have muscle tone on my glutes, so which most people don't. Either I don't think people use the technology that exists, and that's something that I've advocated for myself. And actually, the platform of having that technology was how I won Miss Wheelchair America 2019. Because I stand for life was my hashtag, and I am always annoyed by the fact that able-bodied people in the medical community say, you know, you need to exercise, you should stand more. But for us, somehow it's, they'll say not medically necessary by payers. And that infuriates me because it absolutely is medically necessary. So that's one of my big advocacy efforts.
And I should have mentioned it. I think that was the last time you were with us when you were named Miss Wheelchair America 2019. That's quite an honor. It's, in fact, it's quite competitive, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's usually about 30 states. There are women from 30 different states that compete. All wheelchair users, you have to be a full-time wheelchair user in the community. So different diagnoses, things like that. And it's an advocacy organization. So the competition is based off of your history of disability advocacy. It's not a beauty contest, or I wouldn't have waited till I was 50. But yeah.
Well, you... are a striking physical presence, and talk about a life change. You were, I'm doing the math here, you were 19,
yep.
19 years old when you were shot.
Yeah.
And just the jolt of that, and had to go back to school, but you did.
I did.
You got your degree.
Mm-hmm. 2 degrees. I got undergrad in psychology and master's in social work. And I worked in the medical social work field for almost 20 years, kind of helping other people through that process of getting back to your life and learning how to live a happy, healthy life, even though you are a wheelchair user.
And then things were not as wheelchair accessible as they are now. How was it going to class?
It was rough. It was really steep, you know, boards over steps at a very steep slope. We actually had to carry books then. The doors were really heavy. There were no automatic door openers. People weren't as nice about moving classes as they are now because the ADA wasn't signed until 1990. So
that was after you had come back. And when you came back, you had this major adjustment. Were the students and the faculty and everybody, were they receptive, or was it kind of like you're on your own?
It was mixed. I mean, some professors were really nice and some were not. And some of my friends handled it beautifully and it didn't miss a beat with me. And then there were other people that really didn't know what to say or how to handle it, and definitely lost some friends as well.
But now, I do have a couple of inquiries from listeners. One is another lady named Karen who says that your job now involves this odyssey that you're on to some extent, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm the brand ambassador for New Motion. New Motion is the largest supplier of custom wheelchairs. So custom chairs are not the kind you see at the airport or at the hospital when people have trouble walking. These are highly customized to the individual. This particular lightweight chair is CAD drawn to my body with a carbon fiber back and carbon fiber spoked wheels so that I can load it in and out of the car, because I have done that myself for 34 years. So yeah, I work for them. I was writing blogs was in sales for a while. And then I wrote a bunch of customer oriented material, just lifestyle things, health and wellness, advocacy articles, blogs. Mm-hmm. I now do a podcast, which during COVID I taught myself to podcast. So it's called Life Possible with a Disability. You can listen to it on any format that you...
Life Possible with a Disability,
mm-hmm.
from Karen Roy. Mm-hmm. And another listener, this is Trish, saying that you actually went to the spot. 225 did this a few years ago. The actual spot where it happened, that had to be a cathartic moment.
Yeah, I went back with a crown on my head. So I'd never been back in the 34 years. But I had the honor of being people to watch in 2020 for 225 Magazine, along with Derek Stingley and the owner of Walk-Ons. We went and did a photo shoot. The building doesn't exist anymore, but in that lot. And to come back and just, you know, having had three kids and a really amazing career and to have won an advocacy, a national advocacy award, it was kind of like, yeah, it was a beautiful moment, actually.
David in St. Francisville asked if the men were caught who mm-hmm. were involved in your attack.
Yeah. The shooter was a guy named Alphonse Smith. He was 19 years old. We had a jury trial there. 10 out of 12, there were fingerprints, there were witnesses, friends turned him in, and he got 248 years, two counts of armed robbery and attempted second-degree murder at the time with no probation or parole. I haven't checked on him lately, but I think he's still
there. I think
there.
He's locked up, yeah. As he should be. Mm-hmm. Did he say why he pulled the trigger?
I never spoke to him. I saw him a year later at the trial, and he gave me this like horrible stare down. I rolled in just to identify like photos. I had to stay outside for most of the trial. We had a little stare down moment where he was trying to intimidate me. He was in his orange jumpsuit and his shackles. And I thought to myself, like, yeah, you can't hurt me right now. I also thought like, I wasn't.
Did you stare back?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We locked eyes for a moment. And then I left there thinking, okay, you're too stupid for me to even be mad at, you know, I mean, I don't think he didn't get it. And that was okay for me. It kind of released me from any anger. I really didn't harbor any resentment or anger toward him. I just, yeah, you have to let that go.
And I think it's impossible to hear Karen and not be inspired by her words. And there is a new development, and she has a new challenge. And I saw her the other night, and she's doing well. But you do have a major new development in your life that is not so pleasant.
Yeah. So when you have a spinal cord injury, you have a neurogenic bladder. Typically, neurogenic bladder means that you have to do an intermittent catheterization every time you want to empty your bladder. It's not a big deal. After a while, you learn pretty quickly how to do it. And so that means that I had to use this catheter six times a day for the last 34 years. And we think that's why I was diagnosed with bladder cancer about 4 weeks ago. So the doctor was in trying to remove some kidney stones and accidentally found a tumor. So it's a high grade, but we caught it early. I just got back from MD Anderson, having a second surgery, and I'll start some treatments in a couple of weeks called BCG, which is an immunotherapy, actually a bacteria that was used to develop for tuberculosis that they inject directly to the bladder and actually helps your own cells create cancer-killing cells directly. So mm-hmm. So hopefully that will go well. But it does the catheters that we use have DEEP in them, which is a clastic that's a carcinogen. And it's not allowed in toys in California, but they allow it in catheters. So that's, I have a couple more advocacy crusades to go on now. I understand that correlation doesn't equal causation. And I know that the irritation of the catheter going in is also part of it. But if you're using a carcinogen, I think that that's not a good idea.
So you have another voyage in life that may very well help others. I'm sure it will, but still, you got to be, it's human nature to say, why me? Why have to go through all this? That's from 19 now to your early 50s, but it goes on and you seem to be doing well, but how are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I had my moments of being a little angry, to be being, you know, scared, but to be honest, my life is really blessed and really beautiful. And when I look at like my children, my daughter had cancer growing up. She's been in remission for like 12 years. I have three beautiful kids. I have a job that is purposeful that I love with a company I really believe in. I travel all over. I have a lot of fun. Like a lot of people go through difficult things. And I kind of choose to find the happiness in each crisis that comes up. But I also want to do the work to make things better for not just myself, but other people.
Well, we hope you have a good Thanksgiving and keep fighting.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure you will.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any quit in Karen.
No.
So Karen Roy, she conquered being paralyzed from a bullet in 1987. And looking at her, she is a vibrant 53, and it's hard to believe. I sometimes I lie a little bit and tell people they look better than they do. I say that to myself in the mirror every morning. But in her case, she is a fabulous physical specimen.
Thank you.
And you're doing it in a wheelchair and now conquering bladder cancer. Keep going.
Thank you.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.